accession number 1304302. Rule 2.
Is the Sobolevska Rule 2?
I can't remember the name of the camp, but when we came to the camp, the first thing we met a priest going on his bicycle, and he was the person who has helped us to find this little room. We stayed there for about 6 weeks until my father's documents came through from Scotland.
Who was in charge of this DP camp? Was it Germans or British?
No, the Polish, already the Polish commands. And then my father, they've transferred him from Scotland to Meppen.
Where's that?
That was in Germany. That is, what area you mean?
Somewhere in Germany, anyway.
Yes, near Osnabrück.
In the British zone.
Oh, yes. So we lived there for about 18 months. We lived in the mess, which was very good for me. I was very ill at the beginning because after the war there was no vitamins or anything. So a few doors away there was a hospital. They were giving me injections just to boost my health. And then I joined a British school, which I was learning English. It was every day, and in the afternoon we used to go with the school to the river for a swim and so on, which we had really a very good time then for the year and a half until we came to Britain. Then we came to Daglingworth in Britain.
What kind of a reception did you get in Britain from British people?
Well, the first thing, we didn't really see very many British people because it was all the Polish authorities mostly that were dealing with us. It was only in Dover when we did see some British people, but of course our English wasn't so brilliant, and I was only 13 then, so I didn't really have very many dealings with the British.
Probably you were a bit older, because I think you said you were born in 32.
Yes.
So you would have been 13 in 45. Yet you left Poland in 46.
Well, I was 14 in Germany. I've finished my 14th year in Germany. I do remember that, in that DP camp. And then, yes, I was nearly 15 when we came to Britain, to Daglingworth. That was on the 1st of September. Yes, I think it was 1st of September when we came to Britain. And then my father has got a post because they were trying to send as many people as possible to work already, not to try to keep the army in full swing as it was before. So that camp was for only for people to come, register, and go wherever they were going. So my father has got a job there. He was in the magazine.
Arsenal?
No, he was distributing food, you know, for so many people, because transport was coming of people, so he had to make, everything was on ration yet. So he had to make out how many people he's expecting for this day and what he needs and so on, and then the next day. So I remember writing it all out for him on the typewriter yet with my sister. Many times he just made And so we were there till about March. We came in September until March, and then my father demobilized and went to work because we had some friends in Leeds. During the war, when my father was in Scotland, the British families were taking soldiers for leave for Christmas or whatever. And this family was taking my father a few times for leave to their home. So this is, he always kept contact with them. So when we came to England, they came to visit us in the camp. And they helped us to come over to Leeds. And at that time, there were not, where can you go with the family? No houses, no flats, nothing. English people didn't have enough. So that was just out of the question to rent anything. So we had to buy. But of course, buy, you haven't got any money enough because we ran away. But of course, being in Germany already for 18 months, so my father was getting his pay and he got his back pay also for being absent from the army. So we did have some money. And these English friends, they have signed as guarantors to get a mortgage for a house. So I remember we came to Leeds, they've put this deposit down on the house, but no beds, nothing. So somehow these friends lend us £6 to buy a second-hand bed. So my father and my mother had the bed, but we still didn't. So we slept with these English friends for a few nights. Then we went straight to work. And every week, whatever we were earning, every week we tried to buy something. So first few weeks we were eating on the orange boxes as table and as chairs. And so on. But after that, slowly everybody went to work. And I must say, the neighbors and everybody from the English side, they were really marvelous. They helped us as much as they could. And this is how I came to be in England. But of course, it was very difficult for my mother because although she came to England, everything was fine, but we were only waiting the day when we can go back, because we only ran away thinking it's just for a few months, for a year, maybe a little longer, but we will come back and whatever, we will start our lives back at home. But this, and she was always crying because I was already 15 then when I came to Leeds. I had to go to work because normal age at that time, everybody 14 was already leaving school. And especially not learning all the time constantly, you could not go into a higher education or something because the English people didn't even, never mind us. So what I did, we learned privately in the evenings, working during the day. And paying for the lessons in the evenings. And then I met my husband. As it happened, his uncle was our priest in Poland. So this is how we became friendly, because my parents knew the family and so on. So then we knew each other for 3 years and then we got married.
Coming back to your days in Poland when the massacres of Poles occurred by the Ukrainians, did that take you by surprise that the Ukrainians reacted in that kind of way?
Well, of course it took us by surprise, because before the war, there was no difference. You see, the Polish people used to marry Ukraine people. The Ukraine married Polish. There was no difference. They had their own school. They had their own teachers, they had, I thought, you know, there was no difference. We all lived like very good neighbors. And then just to see, because the war, I think it was during the German occupation that they gave them the idea that they would have the free Ukraine if they got rid of the Poles. I think that was the start of the massacres, because when the first Russian came, there was nothing, none of this. It started during the second half of the German occupation and the second time when Russians came round. This is when they were killing mostly Polish people.
So, for example, when you were a schoolgirl in Poland, would you have Ukrainian friends who would come to your house and so on?
Yes, of course. Yes. Because, I mean, they all used to go to the same school where you had a Ukraine lesson. I mean, I wasn't going to a proper school yet because I wasn't quite seven. And during the war, there was no schooling. And if you wanted to learn Polish, you couldn't. And if somebody, because my mother also had friends that were teachers, so they used to come quietly to give us lessons at home. But if the authorities would find that this is happening, they would take them away to camps or whatever, and nobody would have seen them again. So that was not allowed.
But would the Ukrainian children and the Polish children be able to speak to each other, speaking different languages?
Well, they all knew both languages.
Did you know Ukrainian?
Oh, yes, of course, I still do. Because, children, we played with children, Ukraine children, Polish children. There was no difference between the children. I mean, we didn't, we just knew that they speak different languages, but it didn't matter to us. Because you spoke to them in Ukraine and you spoke to the other children in Polish. So there was no difference.
So before these massacres started, would Ukrainians ever say anything political to you about why don't you recognize a Ukrainian independence?
Not to me, because I was too small, and among the children there was no political talk. But I don't think so, because before the war, when my father was setting up his business, I remember in the village they were building a Ukrainian church, церквя. And all the Ukraine families, they were giving, because it was a village, so everybody had chickens, so one family was be giving from one day whatever the chicken laid, all the eggs for that church, and so on. And so I remember my father had a motorbike, and we were going past once to my kindergarten. He was taking me, and there was the Ukrainian priest and so on, and they were talking about this church. So my father stopped his bike and he said, well, I see that you go to collect all the chicken eggs and milk from other, why don't you come to my house? And he said, well, because we think that you are not Ukraine, you wouldn't give. But my father said, well, God is one, and so he gave them some money for the church. And during the war, at the beginning, this is why they said that they haven't killed us, because my father was good to them. And when they were building that church, my father gave them all the paint, because he was also dealing with the paint, at cost price. He didn't make anything because it was going for church. So they said that they remembered that also. This is why so many Ukrainian people took us to sleep in their house when the bad times came, because not only the Ukrainian people were killing Polish people from the same village, but from different villages as soon as they knew the Polish people are there, they would come and kill you off. So not always they could defend you, you see.
Apart from the different language, was there any cultural difference between Poles and Ukrainians?
Yes, of course there was. They had their own different national dresses which they used to wear.
Were they also Catholics?
No, they were the Orthodox.
Were they of any different economic status? Were they of any inferior economic status?
Well, it is like everywhere. There were poor Polish people, there were poor Ukrainian people. I wouldn't really say they had equal rights as a Polish citizen.
So when you were on the run from leaving Eastern Poland and going westwards, did it seem to be, had you become accustomed to this as a normal kind of existence of constantly being on the move?
Well, my mother tried to hide a lot of things from us as the children. She didn't want to frighten us. So for us, it was great going on the train and seeing different people and so on. We didn't really realize the dangers.
Now, you told me earlier about the period you were in Gliwice, in Silesia. Any other memories of your stay there?
Well, in the over a year we stayed there, when we first came there, the houses were still burning because the front was only four miles away yet. So the houses were burning, although that area was already liberated, but they still were burning the houses, I don't know why. And the bandits, they came, they were looting everything. I remember one day my sister came from her friend. She had gold earrings in her ears, and a Russian soldier tried to grabbed them off her, and she screamed, so he pulled out a big knife, wanted to kill her. And my mother opened the big doors then, so he didn't know that somebody was at home. So he backed out, and that gave my sister a chance to escape. So he then went after my mother. But as you know, in Poland, most of the rooms are going from one room to another leading. So my mother managed to bolt one of the doors and escaped through the window. So this was really a frightening time because there were no men about. There was nothing, only women and children. So the bandits came around, they were looting, they were killing still people. They were cutting fingers off to take the rings off everybody. So it was really, really terrible.
So there was a law and order?
Well, no, because it was still the front was going on. It was just, there was nobody to enforce the law.
So this sounds as though it must have been the earlier part of 1945.
Yes, it was just the early part of 1945.